Today is May 3rd, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, the FBI chief goes before the Senate Judiciary Committee to answer questions about probes into Hillary Clinton and the Russian involvement in the election. The U.S. Secretary of State tells his department where things stand with regard to North Korea.
We are clear, we've been clear to them, this is not about regime change. This is not about regime collapse. This is not about an accelerated reunification of the peninsula.
Also ahead, aid agencies are concerned about losing millions of dollars in food aid that goes to Africa famine victims and using bison to restore an Indian prairie. It's all on today's International Edition. FBI Chief James Comey facing new questions today about his pivotal role in last year's U.S. presidential election, including an investigation of Russian meddling in the contest in which President Donald Trump won the White House. Comey, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the country's top law enforcement agency, is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee right now. Senator Chuck Grassley, who is the committee's chairman, made a point in his opening statement to say that there's still no proof between President Donald Trump's campaign team and Russian officials. Now, with regard to information leaks to the media, Grassley questioned the FBI director that if he, James Comey, had anything to do with reports about Hillary Clinton's investigation over her mishandling of classified material by anonymous sources, or if he ever knew anything about the leaked sources in Clinton or the Trump investigations.
Director Comey, have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
Never.
Question two on relatively related. Have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
No.
Has any classified information relating to President Trump or his associates been declassified and shared with the media?
Not to my knowledge.
The FBI and congressional investigators have focused some of their attention on the links between Trump's first national security advisor, the retired Army General Michael Flynn, and Russia. Flynn accepted more than $30,000 to attend a 2015 dinner in Moscow, celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Kremlin-controlled RT television network, sitting next to Russian President Vladimir Putin, and more than $500,000 to represent Turkey. But Flynn lasted just 24 days on the job before he was asked to step down. The Defense Department Inspector General's office has opened an investigation into whether Flynn sought any permission, as he was specifically told to do when he retired from the military, to accept the payments from foreign governments. Now, the White House has said that in naming Flynn to the top White House security post, it relied on a security clearance he was given in 2016 by the Barack Obama administration. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson saying today that the United States was working on more sanctions targeting North Korea if Pyongyang takes steps that merit a new response. Tillerson was talking to State Department employees today and said that the U.S. is being open and transparent about its intentions.
We are clear, we've been clear to them, this is not about regime change, this is not about regime collapse, this is not about an accelerated reunification of the peninsula, this is not about us looking for an excuse to come north of the 38th parallel. So we're trying to be very, very clear and resolute in our message to them that your future security and economic prosperity can only be achieved through your following your commitments to denuclearize. So this is where we are. We're at about the 20 to 25% stage of this strategy. Thus far, our assessment is it is going like we had hoped for in terms of the response we're getting from others, but we got a lot of work left to do to keep that pressure on.
The U.S. continues to work with China to try and get a stronger National Security Council response to North Korea's missile test, which the Council continues to condemn. As for North Korea, it continues to warn that America's military provocations risk triggering a nuclear conflict. Now, those comments coming after the U.S. sent B-1 bombers into the skies with South Korean and Japanese air forces during training drills. You're listening to International Edition.
health news and notes. This is Living Better.
If you don't like going to the dentist, you surely wouldn't want to go as a test patient for a dentist in training. Now, a Japanese company has developed a way to have new dentists practice on dummy patients using mixed reality, a system that is the first of its kind. Usually, we'd have to use our imagination and an x-ray and sync that with what we're seeing in our patients, says system co-developer Tsutomu Kubota. But with this technology, anyone can see the same information and implement treatment. Dental trainees use practice models in real dentist chairs and are guided by computer-generated images of teeth in a virtual headset that also includes information about the patient's medical history. The company says the mixed reality training system could be introduced to universities and hospitals within 2 years. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Among the top stories in the world, the FBI chief says he is mildly nauseous that the agency might have had an effect on the presidential election. President Trump and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas meeting as a peace deal seems far away. French presidential candidates set to square off in the election's only debate tonight. And China calling for restraint in the Korean Peninsula. Aid agencies working in Africa are fearful that proposed cuts by the Trump administration will affect their ability to get food aid to millions of people facing a possible famine. For press conference, USA VOA's Rebecca Ward spoke with Mark Yarnell of Refugees International about the challenges they face.
Nearly 20 million people could face starvation in Somalia, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen if donors don't come through with aid, according to the United Nations. The UN has received far less so far than the $4 billion it says it needs to avert a humanitarian crisis, like the 2011 famine in the Horn of Africa that killed more than 260,000 people. To make matters worse, Kenya is planning to close its Dadaab refugee camp at the end of May. Mark Yarnell is with the Washington-based advocacy group Refugees International.
There's about 250,000 Somalis living in the Dadaab camp right now. And so in the past, the U.S., I think, with some more leadership, could work with Kenya and urge them, okay, what kind of assistance can we provide you and make sure that the camp is safe, that people have what they need, that it's not taking away from the host communities. But when the U.S. Is now itself closing its doors to refugees, it's harder to push that message.
Although Somalia is in the midst of a severe drought, much of the food insecurity is being driven by ongoing conflicts. In places such as South Sudan, where U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley says the famine is man-made.
It is the result of an apparent campaign against the civilian population. It is the result of killing humanitarian workers, 16 in this year alone. It is the result of denying starving people access to the food and medicine that will save their lives.
No matter the cause of the famine, says Yarnell, food aid must get to those in need. He says aid workers are well aware of the dangers and are sometimes faced with deciding if humanitarian aid is exacerbating the conflict or putting people at risk.
But if the aid isn't even available, you can't even make those choices. So at least allow the aid community the opportunity to be making those choices, have donors monitor to see how it's happening, and then do the best we can for the people who need it, but don't just cut off the lifeline entirely.
Yarnell says just throwing money at an issue isn't the answer. The international community needs to address the roots of the crisis and find willing partners where they can. He says he's hopeful the United States can reestablish its leadership role in bringing the international community together to try to solve some of these challenges. For Press Conference USA, I'm VOA's Rebecca Ward.
And I'm Philip Alexio here in Washington. This is International Edition.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
President Donald Trump's nominee to be the next U.S. ambassador to China, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, appeared in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, facing questions about rising tensions with North Korea, trade, security, and human rights issues. VOA's Cindy Sain reports a number of senators believe he has unique qualifications for the job.
Concerns over North Korea's nuclear capabilities and its threatening rhetoric came up frequently, with senators asking Iowa Governor Terry Branstad about China's role in helping to rein in North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Branstad said Beijing is well aware of the threat its neighbor poses and does not want North Korean refugees pouring into China if there were a war.
I also think that they recognize, as other nations in Asia recognize, that this nuclear obsession that the leadership of North Korea has, and with guided missiles and everything, is a very serious threat to humankind, and that we need to all look at ways we can work together.
China's deteriorating record on human rights was also a focus. Branstad sought to reassure the panel.
If confirmed as ambassador, I will work every day to represent American values to the leadership of China and the Chinese people at large, values that include upholding human rights for all and a free and open market, a rules-based order in the ocean surrounding China, and the importance of free press.
A fellow Iowan pointed out Branstad is currently the longest-serving U.S. governor and highlighted his close ties to China's leader.
Importantly, Governor Branstad also knows China and its leaders well. He first met President Xi Jinping while he was visiting Iowa on an agricultural research trip in 1985.
Branstad said if confirmed by the full Senate, he would use his close ties with Xi to promote peace and stability and would not be bashful about bringing up issues the two countries disagree on. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Well, just a few days ago, China deported Sandy Fan Gillis 3 days after she had been convicted of spying in a Chinese court of espionage and sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. She's currently in Los Angeles with her husband and family members. As VOA's Greg Flakus reports from Washington, the outcome is seen as a sign of better relations between the United States and China, and as a sign that the Trump administration is taking an interest in such cases.
For the first time in more than 2 years, Jeff Gillis and his wife Sandy Fan Gillis are back together and staying with her relatives in California. After she was arrested in China in March 2015, Jeff Gillis began campaigning for her freedom, often staging protests with supporters in front of the Chinese consulate in Houston. Sandy Fan Gillis was accompanying business leaders from Houston visiting China when she was arrested. Jeff Gillis gained the support of John Kam of the Dui Hua Foundation in San Francisco.
I literally began working the case as soon as he called me. I met with senior advisors to the leadership, as well as the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
He says he's not surprised that the couple is avoiding the news media for now.
She's been through quite an ordeal, as you know. She suffered 2 heart attacks while she was being interrogated. So I'm sure she's exhausted. been through a tough ordeal. Her health is not good. And, you know, they haven't seen each other for more than 2 years.
Jeff Gillis also credits Secretary of State Rex Tillerson for bringing up the case with Chinese officials, something Cam says may help others in China.
This particular case, even though it is an American citizen, will, in my opinion, not only benefit other American citizens, of which there are more than 100 who are in trouble of some sort in China, not only them, but it can help others who have been through or are going through similar situations.
This story, in the end, is also about love and the struggle one man conducted to free his wife and bring her back home. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Washington.
Well, bison once roamed North America by the millions, but they were hunted to near extinction in the 19th century for their meat and hides. Today, their numbers are growing again, thanks in part to the important role that they play in land restoration. Erica Celeste has that story from Morocco, Indiana.
These bison calves at Kankakee Sands Nature Reserve may only be a few days old, but they are part of a herd responsible for undoing more than 100 years of environmental damage.
By creating this large-scale restoration project, we've been able to harbor all those species that were just barely hanging on.
Program manager Ted Anker says much of the 429-hectare reserve used to be the largest lake in Indiana, but it was drained for agricultural purposes in the 19th century. While they can't bring back the lake, they can restore the prairie.
And bison are a really easy way to get short grass prairie. They, just by living and doing what bison do, which is mostly eat grasses and make little bison, they create the short grass prairie for us.
The Northwest Indiana chapter of the Nature Conservancy has been working for 20 years to restore the prairie at Kankakee Sands. Late last year, they took the final step, bringing in 23 bison, including 16 pregnant cows. The Conservancy now owns 13 herds in preserves from Mexico to North Dakota. Unlike domestic animals, the wild herd takes care of itself without much human interaction. While farm bison are raised for meat, these animals exist solely for environmental management. In addition to grazing on prairie grasses, which allows wildflowers to grow and provides habitat for rare birds, the bison wallow. The depressions they create fill with rainwater, which attracts amphibians and other small animals. The animals are also a tourist attraction, bringing new sources of revenue to the community. Some visitors return again and again.
The last time I was here, they were right over here in that green pasture area, right close, all of them.
It's expected that the herd will eventually grow to between 55 and 75 animals. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Morocco, Indiana.
Now, since the beginning of time, every generation has tried to find the secret to staying young. Well, one man might have discovered the key in something we can all do, no matter what our age. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti takes us on his musical journey and tells us how it can help anyone with breathing problems.
At Christmas time, we always had a stocking hung.
And when he was six, Jack Hopkins found a plastic harmonica in his. The next week, he shocked his dad.
He heard me playing popular tune of the day, Yes or She's My Baby, and it blew his mind.
Now, thousands of songs later, Jack jams at the Virginia Harmonica Fest. It's a gray-haired bunch who blow classic tunes. Jack founded the Capitol Harmonica Club a while back. He's outlived them all, except Frank Jameson.
I'm 84, so anyway, so it just, you know, I'll never catch up to Jack, but maybe that's okay.
That's the laugh of a man who just turned 97 years old. Jack credits his strong lungs to years of cradling a mean harmonica.
That's because it's the only popular instrument that requires an inhale and an exhale to make music. In harmonica terms, draw and blow, like this.
Everybody ready?
So harmonicas are physical therapy for chronic pulmonary patients in Western Maryland. This group is called the Better Breathers. Kathy Middleton has been on oxygen for 7 years.
Y'all, as long as it closes up like this when you breathe, mine goes like this. And when you're blowing on that harmonica, I feel like I'm breathing better.
Jack says his harmonica helped him get better from a heart attack. Yep, that's him, making music in the hospital. For Jack, music is the tempo of life, played in the key of perpetual youth.
It's been a great life, and it ain't over yet.
Carolyn Prisutti. VOA News, Norfolk, Virginia.
All right, Carolyn, thank you very much. What a charming story. Well, in the wake of several Facebook videos depicting murder and suicide and rape and other violent acts, the social media giant says it's hiring 3,000 more people to review videos and remove those that violate its terms of service. The company's been facing some increased pressure to stop people from posting and sharing violent videos. Now, according to Facebook's terms of service, violent videos, they're not allowed, but as recent events have shown, it can take the company some time to review and remove them. The announcement to the ad staff, or the announcement to actually add some staff to the already 4,500 who review videos, was made today on Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook page. In addition to more staff, Zuckerberg said that the company was going to enhance its software to keep violent videos off the site. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now, or follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. I'm Philip Alexiou in Washington. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A stated objective of the United Nations Security Council is North Korea's abandonment of its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs. For the past 20 years, well-intentioned diplomatic efforts to halt these programs have failed, noted U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in a speech before the Security Council. The threat is becoming increasingly real for Seoul, Tokyo, and ultimately the United States, he said. With each successive detonation and missile test, North Korea pushes Northeast Asia and the world closer to instability and broader conflict. For too long, the international community has been reactive in addressing North Korea. Those days must come to an end, said Secretary Tillerson. We have said this before, and it bears repeating. The policy of strategic patience is over. Additional patience will only mean acceptance of a nuclear North Korea. The time has come for all Security Council nations to put new pressure on North Korea to abandon its dangerous path, said Mr. Tillerson. I urge this council to act before North Korea does. Secretary Tillerson proposed 3 new actions to begin immediately. First, we call on UN member states to fully implement the commitments they have made regarding North Korea. This includes all measures required in Resolutions 2321 and 2270. Second, the U.S. calls on countries to suspend or downgrade diplomatic relations with North Korea. Constraining its diplomatic activity will cut off a flow of needed resources. Third, the Security Council members must levy new sanctions on North Korean entities and individuals supporting its weapons and missile programs, and tighten those that are already in place. Furthermore, Secretary Tillerson called on the international communities to suspend the flow of North Korean guest workers and to impose bans on North Korean imports, especially coal. China has an influential role to play, said Mr. Tillerson, as it accounts for 90% of North Korean trade. The U.S. looks forward to further actions that build on what China has already done. Lastly, all options for responding to future provocation must remain on the table. We much prefer a negotiated solution to this problem, said Mr. Tillerson, but we are committed to defending ourselves and our allies against North Korean aggression. It's time to implement a new strategy to denuclearize North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.